My best friend is working in New Mexico right now, and she got it from me there.
Oh.
Yeah.
I guess we're waiting for Malik to come.
Yeah, here he is.
So how do we want to do this?
Well, I guess we can
one question?
On. Yeah, one question apiece, and then we can introduce ourselves. So they can get our voice.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I'm Liana.
Go ahead and say your last name.
Oh, Liana Irizarry.
Okay. I'm Ruth Owens, and I'm a visual artist.
I'm Scott Andreessen. I'm also a visual artist.
I'm Malik Bartholomew. I'm a historical researcher and photographer.
Okay, so.
So we're picking.
Malik says we should each pick one question.
I just picked two cards by accident.
Oh.
You're already cheating.
No givebacks.
Who wants to start with their first question?
You, since you spoke first.
Put me on the spot. 2015 homicide statistics. 164 shootings related deaths. 28 police involved shootings. So these are the homicide statistics from 2015. That there was 164 shooting related deaths and 28 police involved shootings. And I think maybe this is local statistics.
Yeah,
so
I would assume so.
Yeah. So we have more.
28 police
involved. So it's like a fifth of the shootings were police related.
Mm-hmm.
So the only question I would have, however, to repeat this is why is there so many police related shootings? What type of force is acceptable with police interaction, because we all know what's going on in the community. Right? That's what the question I would have. I said, also, I would say, also, shooting related deaths is where we are in the country on gun control. You know, everything where like, people go in the movie theater, shooting up, and stuff like that. So, where do we make our leaders responsible for putting actual laws in place that protect citizens and people, not trying to stop them from getting the gun, but certain gun control where, I mean, I think it should be a process to own a gun. And I think if you violate something, your gun should be taken away.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think this these statistics also bring up just some serious underlying social questions that we have to deal with on a daily basis, which are how Black people are perceived by the police, and so it's just like a basic underlying feeling that that we have. I mean, we're all probably part of this problem. When we see a young black man walk down the street, and I think that that's like the undercurrent of these statistics. It's like we think about these men, and we always have a question in the back of our minds, you know, is this person going to be a problem? I think about that myself when I walk down the street. Is this, and I'm a black woman of color. I mean, I'm a woman of color, so I'm probably the number one victim of these kind of problems. But I asked that question myself: is this person going to be a problem for me? And I understand that that's probably what the police are thinking in the back of their head. So it's a very complex social problem that that there's probably a complex answer to it. And I think Malik is right that one of the things that we do have to address is gun control. Another thing that we do have to address is, like, how are we raising our children? Are we giving our children the best possible opportunities? And I don't think that they are. So I don't want to. Right, right. That is definitely an American thing. Shoot 'em up, Wild West, yeah, attitude. Yeah, it's also an American attitude of a quick fix. You know, we can solve this right now. We can solve this in
waves.
Yes. Instead of, like, seeking what is the source of the problem, let's just do this quick fix. And with regards to your comment, Mei-Ling, about other cultures definitely have the same, maybe not the exact same, but they definitely have racial tensions. And in England, the racial tension is probably as bad or worse than it is here. But what do we do in America to incinerate that, or to add gasoline to the fire? We add the ability to use a gun, you know, so that makes a huge difference. Self-referential.
We want to live our lives
I remember when there was the school shootings in what, Connecticut. And the fact that even that type of gun violence couldn't spur changes to our gun laws is almost like saying we're giving up on the problem. You know?
Well, I think I agree with you. I don't think the people have given up on the problem. I think it's the leadership of the country. I mean, it sounds very heartbreaking, but when we have a shooting in this affluent, predominantly white community, and white children are murdered, everybody knew, well, we're going to have gun control now. And these rich white people could not reverse or combat the lobbyists with guns. So that shows that we have a problem with our system of government.
Deep-rooted.
That's deep-rooted, where a special interest group can control the well-being of the American people. I mean, there was no reason why. I mean, literally, it was kindergartens and first graders who were murdered in their classroom. Like, any society would be like, you know what, we have a problem. You may want to fix this. Because this guy had emotional and mental issues. There was no reason why he would have access to a gun. So I think it involves, I don't think it's the people, but it's the leadership that we have, whether it be our senators, our congresspeople, because these are, the NRA is sponsoring their campaign. So they can't speak out against this group. So they're just not the matter.
Would you think that we should have, like evaluations before we can get a gun?
I think first we need to look at other systems and other governments. I think there's somebody once said that, like, in 1980 something, there was a mass shooting in England, and their parliament said, no, this can't happen, and they got together, and it hasn't been, like, a mass shooting yet, because they got together, like, we have to solve this issue, and they were like, okay, this has to change, you have to be screened for this, you have to put in an application to get a gun, so they put in things to, you know, combat gun violence. So I think we have to look at that and also really make changes, but it's also people have to hold their leaders responsible. After that, everybody in Congress should have been voted out. Literally, the next day, we should have voted all that out. They like start over.
They need to start somewhere. I mean, there's absolutely no reason that we should be able to purchase an AK-47. For what reason is that? I mean, if you give some reasons like what you're saying, okay, I need to be able to shoot these varmints that are coming into my farmland, or you want to protect myself, you don't need an AK-47. I mean, that was that. I'm with you.
I agree with that. Certain guns, we don't.
Right.
Nobody.
And that's a way to, like, maybe seep into the problem, because it's like such a formidable force, the NRA, like just a way to seep in and start chipping away at it. Let's chip away first at this thing that everyone probably can agree that is not necessary in our society. You know?
There was a safety feature that was mentioned in, like, the last Democratic debate that could easily, like, be implemented in all guns, where you just need to, like, your thumbprint in order to shoot the gun.
Right.
Like, something as simple as that. And that's, like, that funding should not, like, we have no funding to make that happen. But, like, something as simple, you know.
Well, Chris Rock said, how about we just make every bullet $100?
Yeah.
People are not going to waste the bullets. Right. Yeah, you can buy it down, but if the bullet costs $105,000 a bullet, you're like, hold up. I can't afford this. So, yeah. So maybe,
he's so silly.
Yeah, so maybe that was. So. I don't want to put too much time in there, because I'm sure this is going to come up about shooting and shooting next.
Yeah.
But I know we have some other good questions.
Are you an artist, LeBaron?
I am. Yeah. I'm an actor, a poet, and a MC.
Oh, okay.
Discuss media representations of Black New Orleanians.
horror film that you make. That is the epitome. I do think it's mixed, because you get, okay, I'll say this. They love Black New Orleanian culture. They don't love Black New Orleanian people. And that's problematic. They love the bands, the brass bands, the music, the food, just the kind of my opinion. But what we saw in Hurricane Katrina is that, which I'm praying for my brother Kanye, he did it. Black, you know, he was like, George Bush doesn't care about black people. The casting of old, we don't know what's going on, old people drowning. Like, you know, I think the media, when they talk about the crime, when they talk about the shooting deaths, when they say that there's, the night war gang or the civil war gangs, and I tell people, there's no such thing as gangs, organized gangs in New Orleans. We don't have that. Like, you may have a group of drug crews, but they're not a gang. They're not even that organized to be considered a gang. Like, people in New Orleans, we're not going to organize like that of a gang. So, I do think there's a problematic view that in local media and national media about Black New Orleanians. But one thing that is respected, and people do know, that Black or New Orleanians are culturally talented. And that's crazy.
Yeah, but they want to capitalize on that talent. So.
And I think that question speaks as much to a local question, but it's a national problem. Some years ago, a friend of mine was exhibiting at the Studio Museum in Harlem, which is primarily African-American museum. And so my brother was in town from Washington. We grew up kind of in the suburbs, if you will. Weren't many people of color when we were growing up. He's always worked in the fishing industry, and so he wasn't around people of color. So we get to the Studio Museum. Diverse, beautiful, intelligent, articulate group of people. And we were walking to get a drink afterwards, and you could see that he was visually kind of shaken. And he kind of said, I had no idea how much the negative stereotypes of African Americans had filtered in. And how completely ignorant he was of this, you know, diverse group of people. And it was one of those things, you know, most of my friends in New York were black. And so he had been around tons of my friends over time, but he always thought about it on a case-by-case basis, where overall the negative stereotypes, it really fucked with him, you know?
I think that those, the negative stereotypes question that was brought up in this card feeds into the first question that we talked about. The negative stereotypes brought up by the media definitely helps perpetuate the idea of a black man being a threat to you and being a problem. And so that, like, it's kind of it becomes a circle. I mean,
I don't know if it's local, but have you ever read the comments underneath a Times Picayune article online? Under any article. But I mean, if they put, like, you know, somebody being murdered or something like that, the comments underneath in the Times Picayune, like they're on their website, the comments underneath the articles, you should read it. Like,
they're heartbreaking. It's like, I can't.
It's heartbreaking, but really read the comments, because they call them thugs, they call them animals.
Like, what are they doing here?
Yeah, they say such vile stuff.
It's really heartbreaking. It's hard to read, for me. You know, it's hard for me to read.
I don't read it.
It's
hard for me to comment. It's hard but easy for me to comment on this subject, because I studied media in college, so I know the agendas and I know what's going on with media, and I know a lot of it is about the dollar, but I know also that a lot of it is pushing personal agendas. When Jesse Jackson ran for president, Rupert Murdoch sent down a personal note to every Fox station to basically slander this Negro. Don't let him succeed. He sent down a personal note, and
it's, that's why I don't watch the media. I had an older white man, and I was, he worked in Birmingham during the civil rights movement for the newspaper. And he came to my class, and the only thing he told us is believe half of what you see and none of what you read. And that stuck with me for my entire life. So it's hard for me to, even though I studied it, it's hard for me to take anything as truth that I see in the media. At, you know, even if it's, if I see it with my own eyes, I'm like, I don't know if that's the full truth.
So then you were trained, so you know that you can't believe everything, but then you have to where you didn't go to school and they believe everything they see. And then they perpetuated that and started shooting the gun. It's like you talked about for the killing, and it just gets bad. Like, how do we teach everybody that we can't believe everything that you see?
I think what we have to demand is a different rhetoric from the media. You know, I think they feed us that because that boosts ratings when there's murder on television and there's rape on television. It's black people doing it, and it's like, just, I don't watch it. I don't invest in it. I don't invest in the media.
I think that's what we have grown accustomed to, and that's what we is. Yeah. I think people, well, I mean, everybody loves to feel good. Everybody loves to hear good things about people and what they're doing. Every now and then they throw in a feel-good article or news story or something like that. But I think, you know, but that's what we are.
It's a part of it, but people are more in control in their own media than they've ever been now. And I know on my timeline feed, I get two good stories a day. The rest of it is people sharing what they want to see, which is somebody got shot.
And you just said something that now we actually, through social media, control the information that we receive. Because, like, pretty much, like when the stuff was going on in Ferguson, people knew about it before the media. It was like, man, this is going down. The police are doing this and this and that. And people knew about even in Baltimore.
It was the first honest version of media.
But I think it also feeds back to the idea that we talked about before, that Americans are very lazy in a lot of ways, and they're also very willing to accept the easy answer. And I think it's really easy to say, okay, black people are here, white people are here, let's put these two categories and let's put some stereotypes on them. That's easy for my brain to digest and for my brain to see. And I don't have to think anymore about this very complex social problem that I am definitely a part of. I mean, we know we're all a part of it. And so that's why the media may not change. It's what is it, geared toward a sixth grade education? I mean, you know, people don't want to think about it. They just want to have easy answers.
It's so funny, in media training, I was talking to somebody in the organization, I was like, no, I said, you should not, so you can't use too many big words, so you can't be too long. So you have to be direct. To the point, and you have, like you say, used to a middle school or sixth grade education, so they can understand what you're trying to say. And it's so funny that, you know, news media and stuff, they say that, like, the American people are not going to get it if you're too intellectual, so you have to make it where they can understand it. So that says a lot, like you said, about our society.
Even, like, to build off of your thought and, like, how people, they want to feel good story, right? But I think, like, when I saw this question, I thought immediately of the education system here in New Orleans, because I am a teacher, and how, like, from, I think, outside of New Orleans, if you live outside of New Orleans and you're studying education, people look at New Orleans as the education system here is such ultimate reform. And it's like the ultimate, like, feel good story, like all these black and Latino children are being saved by these white saviors, right? And so I think about, although it is like, it seems like a feel good story from the outside, but it is like just so genuinely distorting the situation here, because like it's like extremely oppressive. Like, I work in a charter school, it's an extremely oppressive system, and they're like not truly educating our children at all, you know? And it's like, how that feel good story would allow that.
Did you say that they're not really educating?
I don't think they're truly educating with empowerment. Like, the systems there are super oppressive.
Yeah.
Like, the system in
what way? Actually, I was, my sister, she's in a dance group, and she danced with young girls, and she was saying how they was talking about something about black history, And the young girl was like, what? And it was like, what? And it was like, they're not telling you this in school. And she was like, no. And they literally, so my thing is, a lot of people talk about, like you said, like the public schools and how the media makes it where it was so bad before Katrina. But we had teachers. We had teachers who cared.
Mm-hmm.
We knew our teachers. We had teachers who, like, my older sister, fifth grade teacher, would be saying, be my teacher. So the teacher was connected to me, my family, our community. She knew who we were. She knew our mother. She knew all of this type of stuff. She could call on our parents on fourth grade. You know, I remember walking in, and the teacher was reading my name, and she was like, follow me. She said, hold up. Is this your father? I went to elementary school with your father. I know I'm not going to have a trouble with you. Your daddy was the smartest boy. And like that. But they don't get that because now they're shipping in teachers from out of town. A lot of them are young white professionals. And also, what's not being discussed is how the majority of our teacher being focused on was young black women. But now they pretty much kill a part of black middle class New Orleans because they're no black teacher. Not in the majority anymore. So that money they used to make. So it's just a lot of things. But from the media perception, like you said, everywhere you go around, you go to Detroit, you go to LA, they're talking about, we need to do what they did.
They're trying
wrong.
To model after it. It's so scary. It's like genuinely so scary, like working in the system and knowing that like cities across the country are looking here to model after the system.
When you say oppressive, what do you mean by that?
Well, first, there's no ties to the community, like you were saying. Like, and I'm a teacher of color, but I'm also from out of town too, right? So I don't like speak the same language as my kids in many ways. Majority of the teachers are white, which comes with their that bias, you know. There's like a lot of racist systems that are implemented because of like administration is white for sure. So like the systems that teachers have to work in are just like extremely oppressive. Like our kids have to walk in straight silent lines. They have like tiles. They have black tiles in our floors that our kids have to walk till eighth grade. Like grown children. Oh, Renew is a. Woo.
But also walking the line is a prison
thing. It is.
So they walk the line in prison.
They walk, yep, straight silent lines. They have to like they have these positions like spark position. You have to be like this.
That is so 19.
Forget about 50s. Learning black history, black culture like in depth, right? It's like very much from a white group, like if they want to teach it, it's from like a white like perspective. Like we'll talk about Martin Luther King and Rosa Parks.
To get over that hump, we gotta like help people debunk the idea that understanding is a higher calling. Understanding is here. It's not here. It's not hard to get to. Like you were saying about, you know, people are lazy. We treat that idea of understanding like it's not reachable for everybody. And especially with our kids, when you have white educators educating black kids, it's fine, but they have to understand how our kids are, right? There are fundamental differences between all of us sitting at this table based on our genetic makeup. That's just real. There are fundamental differences. But to understand that and know that and accept that is a difference. And those are the people we should have educating our children. White, black, I mean, of course there's oppressive systems in place. I understand. I went to a school like that. It's terrible. It sucks. Anywho, it's just...
I went to, I'm probably one of the oldest ones here at the table, and I was in the Army, and so we, just talking about schools, and so we had one tour of duty, which was in Augusta, Georgia, we lived in a black neighborhood, and all of our schooling was done in a brand new, beautiful place. It was a beautiful new building. All the teachers were black, all the administration was black, so I'm kind of going to give you a little bit of counter argument here. Everyone was black. It was in our little community, and I was like killing it. You know, I was from first grade through third grade. I was like it, like the best student ever. I mean, I was bad, but I mean, my conduct grades weren't so great, but I was very, very bright. Then we moved from that school system to a Department of Defense school system in Germany. which was up to the nouveau or the standards of the rest of the United States. I was so behind. I remember crying and like having to learn my multiplication tables with my mother because they were like on multiplication. We hadn't even gotten to multiplication yet. And so there's got to be a way to bridge this, these two.
So that is, I mean, that's the argument, as much of the argument that like has allowed the charter school system to like develop to what it
right.
is here in
so
New Orleans.
Because
before it was like, I mean, our kids, you know, they were like not ranking nationally at all. Like it was like the worst education
right.
system in the country.
So there's got to be a way to join those, the two ideas.
Yeah, but like they have hit a plateau too. Like there has not been work for years. Like New Orleans is riding on that like charter school success, where my kids are still ranking like 40% mastery. Like they are not being successful. And it's like these systems only work to a certain extent. And I think a majority of it had to do with like just simply the schools have got so much more resources after the charter school like movement because they got private funding, you know? Like
there's a balance between school and home and culture.
Yeah.
What the expectations of the community is for its school and its community. And community dictates what the experience of the children will be. And you have to be careful pretty much saying, well, this one did bad and this one did good and stuff, but no, what is the community expectation for these children? Also, what are they doing outside of the school to nurture the children, to make sure that they're getting everything they need to get, because they know we need them to do this, like we need them. So, and for a society, for a city, or a state, to build a new prison tells me what their expectations are. So,
yeah.
I mean, they're not hiding it. They're saying, okay, like she said, okay, we got them. You know, normally, they used to say a long time ago that New Orleans did not necessarily have the best school system because they was teaching them to be either entertainers or to work in the hospitality industry. You don't need a highly educated workforce to work in clean somebody's bathroom. However, now with the influx of more migrant groups here in the city, you don't even need them for that. So where else can you make money from them? In prison. Like, prison is a business. You do not do prison. A lot of people think prison, we lock them up and try to reform them, lock them up to keep them in society. Prison is a billion-dollar business. There are people who get paid millions and billions on operating prisons. So we have to look at the number of value and see what's going on. Because clearly, they didn't build that new prison for anything. They built that prison as a business and to make money.
And honestly, most schools are a holding pattern until they figure out what they want to do with you.
Right.
Most public schools are just like, all right, he's going here, she's going here, they're going here. Like, just based on grades and how you function in this small society, this is how we figure you're going to make it out.
So there's nobody saying, okay, we want this industry to be the next big industry. We want Aerosol, we want this, we want, you know, like, we want to be like the South version of technology. So we need all of our students to really learn technology because we need them to take these jobs in the next 10 years. Like, but there's nobody saying we need them to take these jobs. So
I think that's a really good point, especially with the technology because, I mean, I'm an artist, but I do think that the technology should be a focus because that we can do that here.
Yeah.
We can definitely do that here. There is no reason why we shouldn't be able to do that in New Orleans. I mean, it's not like, you know, we're farmers or we have, it's reliant on a specific natural resource. Only the natural resources that come from ourselves and our own natural intelligence. But I wasn't trying to say that like the old system was a good one and the new system, but the new system is obviously not really new. From what you're telling me, it doesn't sound like that's a new school system. That sounds like what they implemented with this quote-unquote new system is really an old system that they did in 1950s. That's what my mother had to do, like walk down, you know, straight line, put your hands on the table like that. That doesn't foster any type of creativity or anything like that. I sent my kids to a country day school. I mean, we spent a fortune on it. But those kids are all over the classroom. You go in there, you don't even know what's going on. They're everywhere. And they come out like being able to think.
And I was actually charter school educated back in Jersey, K through 8. But it was like, before I came here, my understanding of the charter school as a result was like very different, because it was a very like liberal kind of, you make your own path charter school. And it gave, like, I learned to love as a result, right? I mean, learn to love. I love to learn. I love to learn.
Who was your teacher?
But like my kids, like the education system here for real does not foster that at all, and like completely, I'm like, it's not a system that kids want to be in.
I'm setting them up because one of my friends, she's a teacher at one of the schools, and basically their grading scale is even setting them up for success. So like a C is like a 40 or a 50, and when I was in
because they're all
right. So now they're all at this like base level. They're all like, oh, I'm getting a C, but really it's like a failing grade. They're going into a different school system, and then they're like, oh, well, I was, you know, valedictorian, but I mean, you only had a 60 like in your class. So it's like, how are they even measuring their success if it's at a 40, 50, it's passing for everybody?
I forget who said it, but friend, an educator, actually last night she gave me a card, and on her card it says, we have to make the world worthy of our children, and we're not, the education system doesn't think that way. We have to make the world worthy of our children, not the other way around.
Well, my understanding of charter schools is it started out, you know, individual school based on a group of people that wanted to create, you know, a small independent school. It was never a model that was supposed to be uniform all over the, you know, all over the country.
That was I went to an independent charter, so that was my experience, but here it's networked. So you have to be, it's like standardized, like the network looks after every single thing. Like teachers have no autonomy. It's really, really hard to do what you want or like to react to your children's needs because you're being
testing is a big thing now in school. I mean, we had to take one or two tests. They take like kids today just take test after test after test, trying to, you know, rate them. So,
yeah, you really have to look at the individual child, which is what your friend had on her card. You know, we have to. Everybody. I mean, it doesn't matter what color you are. You have to look at the child. That's why they're all over the
place. To someone like you, who can educate my child as well as a small, teach him how to love again. So I guess I'm gonna be the taskmaster. So we gonna got different cards. Then you the rest of them. So
before we go on, do you mind if I ask you a question? Were there major? I guess can you peg major ideological differences between the school you grew up in and the one you went to in Germany on how they taught?
I'm sorry, I was in fourth grade.
It's been a while.
He was like, say no more.
Yeah.
I teach foundations in the art program up at LSU, and one of the big challenges for me is my students come in and all they want to know, like, is it going to be on the test? And breaking them of that so they can become kind of independent and, more importantly, almost inquisitive is really difficult, you know, and they ask you, what do I need to do to get a good grade? And your you know, the answer is everything but what you just asked me, you know, like, it's really difficult.
But that's how they are, and they get there. When I was in college, and they bring them to college, they bring them to the workforce, and it's very scary when people are like, hey, what do you need to do? How do you do that? Instead of saying, let me see if I can create a new way of how to do, you know, so they don't think like that, because since they was in kindergarten, that's what they were told, do with the test. You got to worry about the test, you got to worry about the test. I mean, after you've done it from 12 through kindergarten through 12, I mean, can you really break that mind cycle of really thinking for yourself?
Yeah, I think that now that I have a second to reflect on the question that you asked me, I think that some of the Georgia school, the Augusta, Georgia school, there may have been an underlying expectation that y'all aren't really going to go anywhere anyway, you know, and you don't need to think for yourself and like what we were talking about.
The problem is, don't you also thinking at a young age that you could take anything you have?
Yes. Not just be a cog in the wheel, not just fall into this expectation that has been given to you and everyone seems to be propagating. You
know,
I mean, even Common Core is a corporation, capitalistic, driven type education system. Like, because you got to think about, once again, like the prisoners, like, somebody made those textbooks and was like, I'm going to push this agenda so they can have to buy these textbooks from my company. So we have to watch out for corporate greed and capitalistic greed, which we don't, because it's such a fundamental part of our society.
So integrated.
And it's so integrated who we are.
Get out of their hands, at least in the school system. Like, you, at the end of the day, you have donors you have to oppress, and like, they're white corporate donors, and like, they come into your school and like, things aren't structured. Like the model that someone loves to say is like, structure liberates. We believe here that structure liberates. Like, that's the narrative they always say.
Oh my goodness.
It's kind of Jim Jones.
And it sounds like that Hitler
like,
thing.
Like, when has it ever liberated people of color? Tell me that.
Wait, that's what they're
saying? Liberty liberates.
Yes.
Who says structure liberates? The corporation?
No,
you have to do it like that, but it's not liberating.
Like,
you have to think like this.
Structure liberates,
yeah.
Yeah,
so that's like the mentality that the people that
making are making machines
with my kindness.
Yes.
Oh, this one right here.
Yeah.
Okay. So unemployment rates. Blacks 2005 had an 18.5% unemployment rate. In 2013, 13.6%. Whites in 2005 4.1% unemployment rate. In 2013, 4.6. Black men in 2011 52%, and white men in 2011 21%.
Do you want the blanks?
Those were too many numbers for me to keep in my head while I'm writing.
Yeah, we can just read it. Just pass it around.
It's all, I tell you right now, hard to find a job as a black man.
Especially in New Orleans.
Everybody wants you, like,
you are required to prove yourself in so many ways when you walk through the door. Like, you are, like, as soon as you walk through the door, you have, like, I don't know what it is, but you, it's hard to
respond. Already against you, so you kind of have to work against the negatives to even get to, like, a zero.
Right, you gotta be dressed well, you can't talk how you normally talk, you have to, what, kiss a little butt, do whatever you gotta do, and you still probably need a job. So you gotta know somebody.
This is the 11th.
You gotta fight and claw and scratch. It's a hustle. My dad told me something the other day. He told me, as a black man in this world, you gotta do a little bit of everything and ask God to forgive you. And that's probably the realest thing I can say about unemployment rates. You gotta do a little bit of something with everything so you can survive. So you can eat and put a roof over your head and just ask for forgiveness at the end of the day.
That's a hustle.
I'm serious. And I know you know. I mean, it's probably never been terrible, but you had to do whatever you had to do to get it done. And I'm not saying it's illegal. I'm not saying it's wrong, but you had to be on,
but
like...
It's very much an honest mentality. And that's why you see a lot of what you see on TV. Crime is, I got to get mine, I got to get me. Because if you think about it, first of all, we talk about education, graduate. Let's be honest, you can work two part-time jobs that has low end, what you're gonna make, what, $9,000 a piece on each job a year? $12,000 maybe? So you can live over $12,000 a year. Again, you start, gaining, start going to places, you get a child. So are you gonna be able to feed your child? $12,000 a year. So it's gonna be like, okay, I have to do things to really, provide for myself and my family, whether it be legal or illegal. Some people do it legally, some people do it illegally. And then I mean illegal in a way of some people do it illegally where they have to do illegal stuff. Some people are doing what you can say illegal business, meaning, I don't know about vice doing that, but I can cut hair, I can do this, So, but unemployment is an issue for any society. Because you want people to be productive, and you want to work at the same time.
When you at the lowest socioeconomic class and have always been stepped on, of course, if unemployment's issue is going to be the biggest issue.
Right. Because you can't be living in Gatsby $3 a gallon.
Me and my friend joke. I call him every day. We both have jobs now. And we joke and we say, man, I've been eating every day. And we joke about that. But, like, it was a point where we weren't eating every day. And we were grown. Well, not. We were young men. But we were trying to make it happen. And this point, just we wouldn't eat every day. And we joke now. It's like, well, I had this to eat. I ate pancakes yesterday. I got money to spend on this. Like, and it's little stuff. It's like, I got money to go buy water for the house. But it's fun though. It creates a lightness in life. It's not so heavy.
You have to bring something to laugh about it. And it all starts with the school system. It's all interrelated to that. If you're not prepared to go out into the world, then what do you expect? Do you expect anything other than unemployment if you're not prepared? There's no way.
But also urban areas, there are few people of color, or even in rural areas. Pretty much, it needs to be more of an education on entrepreneurship. People shouldn't always have to look for a job. People should be prepared and skilled enough to create a job. And the problem is, me and my sister just drove past there. That used to be a game of shame. Now it's a business giving out coffee, but it's probably from somebody probably. It's just real. It's like some white people who just established a business. Why couldn't we establish a business? Why didn't nobody give us that chance? Why nobody give us that opportunity? Why didn't nobody give us that? Setting up and going to people in black churches like, hey, these are business grants. This is how you apply to get a grant for this business. Because people don't get all, territory normally. Like, there's
people go for a business loan, the bank tells them no. We really have to educate the workforce and create the jobs and create new businesses. Because, once you get corporate level, try to get the most out of the person for less dollars. And then we have desperate unionizes. When you look at people as a product, I need to figure out how much work I can get out of her and how less I can get out of her. Society should not work.
When we say educate the workforce, are we talking about brown people, or are we talking about people who are at the helm of the workforce and educating them to like a sensitivity to people who are trying to establish their own businesses? Because it's I know, even though that coffee shop's on the corner, I know 10 brothers trying to start coffee shops, you know what I'm saying? Like, I know these people are out here trying to do this, but which side needs to be educated? Is it us, or is it who will be educated?
They both need to be educated at the same time.
Yeah, because it's when we say us needs to be educated too, because us doesn't have the opportunity to think creatively. It's like, okay, I'm expected to have a job in the hospitality industry. I'm not expected to go out and do something for myself, start a farm, start an organic farm. I would love that, because I'm all about healthy food and everything. And
I know I need
I think
to be
a lot of people
personally.
Are. What?
I need to be educated personally just on starting a business, on learning how to start a business.
Even starting a nonprofit organization, doing something to help your being educated. And a person needs to have the skill of meaning, reading, writing, critical thinking, how to communicate with people. Also, they need to have a high school. I don't think anybody should leave high school without a skill or a trade. Especially if you're a person of color.
Yeah, you gotta have two of them.
IT network. I mean, these are things because there was a group that came to my college, young black kids. I said, some of y'all are going to college, some of you may not go to college. Some of you may not even want to go to college. I said, but even if you go to college, get a skill. You build that gap. If someone doesn't want to go to college, get your own cosmetology license. Get your Walmart. Get your plumber license. Because that's something nobody can ever take from you. And then anywhere you go, literally, after I came to Katrina, after that meeting was up, I was looking for a ball. That was looking for from the wall. Big Papa. And he was still making money. Everybody knew I was like, I need to have a wall in this first.
Right.
Cut my hair. So while he had lost everything, he was still making money because he had a skill.
Right.
Everyone, and there's somebody, somebody told me don't even do this. I feel old. We had to take wood shop with that. We had to build something.
We took wood shop in 7th grade.
I didn't want to take wood shop.
That is a shame.
But I appreciate that I built something. And they taught me how to measure. And told me how
I didn't have helmet. I took wood shop.
Did you have helmet?
I took wood shop.
You took wood shop. Yeah, you should. Yeah,
especially the option. I feel like we live in this day and age, we live in a place where it could be so easy to be an entrepreneur. Like with technology, it's like you can promote whatever the hell you want. All over the world. Exactly.
Yeah, but why aren't they teaching that in the schools? Like a class, like they're implementing stupid shit like Common Core. Why aren't they teaching a business class to students?
Because the focus is so much on data, on the test scores at the end of the day. And there are programs out there, there's code.org that Obama just put out there to teach, and it was specifically to teach children of color how to code. And so, I try to do that with my kids, on the side when I have extra time, because I know how to code, but, it could not be a class because, you're not going to be tested on that, you know what I mean? That's a life skill, but, is that going to make our math scores go up? No. So.
Because they're training the workforce, basically.
Yeah.
That's why they're not educating people.
So. Yes, exactly. No art program. There's no art program in my school. None. There's no, my kids don't have the opportunity to create something for themselves.
Do they, I'm sorry, Do your kids ever get to go out into the community, like field trips into like people who have like a photographer, go visit a photographer, or go visit coffee shop or like a lawyer or a doctor?
Yeah, teachers are advocating now to have that and like have time built into our schedule to at least have people come in. So like it is happening, but like it should have been a program that was already established and is like part of their curriculum. You know what I mean?
My dad has never worked since I've been born. My dad has never worked. Before me, he was a businessman. He had a lot of large sums of money, and he got put in jail for embezzlement, which he did not do. But he did not want to work a minimum wage job because he used to handle million-dollar contracts for the Alabama government. So he didn't want to go back. My mom cleans up after folks, still does it. And I come from that, and this is just giving y'all my story. I'm still figuring it out. Like I didn't have that in my home to know like this is how I do this, this is how I do this. My dad's been hustling since I've been born, and my mom been cleaning up behind old white people since I was born. So I'm breaking that cycle and figuring it out for myself. And I wish I had had an education system that helped me with those things because it's necessary. It's very necessary. My dad was a good educator because he did do those things at one time, but if you're not keeping in practice, you lose luster. So, yeah.
Do you think that among the New Orleans African American middle class community, would the middle class be willing to be mentors? You know, it's like professional mentors available to young people.
You're
not
profit, right?
Oh, is that what you're doing?
That's exactly what we're doing. But our focus right now is young girls, just because we can relate and show them something different other than what they see in the media, and like give them opportunities to figure out what they want to do. So like you said, everybody doesn't want to go to college, but you need to figure out something. So it's not just like, oh, I'm going to sit here and just focus on graduating from high school. What are your plans? Let's help you figure out goals for your life. So they have like a holistic curriculum. So it's like mind, body, and soul. What do you want to do? What do you want to accomplish? And then we go from there. So if you tell me these are your goals, I'm going to help you accomplish them.
10 and 18.
Because
you gotta give them.
Right.
I'm
right.
Teenage,
but you don't
want
to give them
to. I agree with that. Like kindergarten.
We want to mold their minds as young as possible. I don't want to go and get a little second grader, but fifth grade is awesome.
And they're also so aware at that age. Like
they're very educated. They want to know.
It's these phones, man. It's these phones.
The technology. And Louisiana is number 3 in teen pregnancy. I don't know if y'all know that. So when I found out that Louisiana
was... We're not one anymore.
Number 3 in teen pregnancy, I was like, hey, Louisiana. So I was like, so clearly y'all don't have anything else to do besides get pregnant. Let's figure out what y'all can do.
Let's not get started.
Right. But that's the focus.
Is there one Planned Parenthood in town now?
Yeah.
One.
And they're trying to get rid of that one.
Yeah. Thank you.
Exactly. Because they feel like it's not helping the girls. But they need birth control. They need some type of health care. Nobody is teaching them in the schools about, like, we don't have sex ed anymore.
No, let me just tell you one medical fact. I'm a doctor before I changed careers. Right now, the Society of Pediatrics is advocating the IUD for teenagers.
Oh, are you serious?
IUD. It's not the pill.
That's the thing that goes.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Okay. So it's not the pill. You don't have to sit there and remember.
Yeah.
To put things, you know, to take a pill. All you need is an IUD.
Yeah.
It's not going to help you in terms of like sexually transmitted diseases.
Of course.
But it will help that one issue of pregnancy. And I don't think everybody knows that. I don't think everybody knows that that's what they're advocating, and that is like a huge step. And I have two daughters, and yes, they have IUDs.
Well, check this out, because I had an issue. Well, when I was in high school, I was a senior. My mom tried to take me to the doctor to get on birth control, and I wasn't having sex. And so I had an issue with even having the procedure done.
Well, like, yeah, I'm that's not, a different situation. Well, if you're having
but sex. A lot of girls are dealing with their parents like, well, I don't want them to get pregnant, so I'm just gonna kind of just get this because they're doing it, or you
it has
know,
to
like
be on an individual basis.
Right.
I mean, if your daughter's having sex, I don't think you should say, stop having sex. You know, that's not right. And
but there should be more conversations in the home so that these girls feel comfortable with, you know, their sexuality.
I mean,
and what they are
and
doing.
I went with my daughter.
Yeah. And that's great. Like, I applaud you for that.
Let's just take care of this. We're not going to have, that's not going to be one of the problems we have to deal with. We have a lot of problems to deal with. That's not going to be one of them.
Not that one. Yeah. It's taboo in the household, though.
It is taboo. I know.
Well, that's what our program is for. We want to have, so like, you don't want to talk to your parents all the time, but at least you'll have somebody that's there to like communicate with. If you do want to go get birth control, let's figure out the ways that you can do that. Or,
So. Yeah. And safely.
Yeah. Everything.
If any of your, I mean, I'm still practicing medicine. If any of your, you guys want to come over and visit my office at any time? That's
that would be great.
5 minutes.
No,
I'm recruiting in about 5 minutes.
Okay.
So if there's other cards that you want to get to, we want to do the rest of the deck.
Y'all want to do like a speed read?
1 minute. All
right.
One of the hot ones. Yeah.
One word answers.
Yes.
No. Boy.
Well, they said we can write new ones, right?
How's yours? Okay, I have a question. How has gentrification impacted Black communities here in the past decades?
I just moved here. I don't know.
You just moved here?
Just,
so you're a gentrifier?
I am. Yeah. Oh, wait, I'm not changing stuff. I'm like,
okay.
I'm joining in with people I know and like.
Okay.
I like
okay.
this.
Where
I'm
are you from?
Alabama.
Alabama?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm raising people out of their original home, their community. People who want to do not mind additional people learning more in the culture, we have a problem with people attacking the culture as well as trying to replace the culture. That's the issue with that, and also respecting the culture. Glenn is saying that different people are going to come. Your people have always come. French, Spanish, German,
Alabamians.
Put your plug in.
Damn Alabamians. I didn't used to be a part of Alabama. But we have people who always come to New Orleans and start adding to the table. What we don't have is the different stuff of things that we're culturally involved in. Are there a lot of people that are using it? It's a serious issue, but the major issue is the price of the house and the rent. Rent is too damn high.
Rent is too
damn high.
Rent is too damn high.
And it's going to only get higher.
Yes.
Yeah.
My rent kind of high right now.
The margins of the city to live in. That's something we never really had before. Poor Black people, rich white people, even poor white people. Poor Black people have lived together before.
terrible. I think it was always everybody chose. So to have this thing where now rich people come up altering like Shire and now the price of who people afford to stay in these communities is something very new to New Orleans, and it's going to be interesting to see how
that's happening. That's happening globally too. Like the neighborhood that I grew up in, Hoboken, New Jersey. It's like this little city right across from New York. Originally was like predominantly Latino and Black community, and then like while it's like completely gentrified now. Like it's like so white. The culture is completely stripped out, and like yeah, it's an extension of Manhattan now, and it's like I see the same patterns happening here in New Orleans. Like it's in its earlier stages, but like.
Well,
it's like, how do you fight that system that's so big?
In the Joan Mitchell Center.
Yes.
Yeah. And like, how do the natives feel about Joan Mitchell sitting at the center here? And, you know, I'm sure all the properties around here just go through the roof.
It's beautiful.
Which is kind of good. I mean, New Orleans is also a city.
Now, all the people want to give back, not really give back. It's like, oh, we're helping them, but no, how are we doing with the community?
Mm-hmm. A friend that's an urban planner was actually making the point that the most drastic change in gentrification happened. To him, gentrification was the moment where somebody looks at the resources a neighborhood has and says, I'd like to take those rather than like I'd give like to give back to them. My wife and I, you know, listen, we were one of the people.
Plumbing.
Yeah.
It's overrated.
Peace out, y'all.